Yeah, that is. You'll get the reporting
to be any sort of action.
Well, you know, you've got the interest.
Yes.
Yep. And that's really
important.
We're all here for this. No one's in the wrong place. I've been instructed by the people to ask if they're in the right town. There will be a brief survey after now.
Thank you so much.
If you've ever been to a professional conference, they always ask people a brief survey.
Yes, that's true. apologies for even being in my phone for a second. Handling a situation.
No, you can handle whatever situations you need. Like I said, we're on time. That always gives you like 2 or 3 minutes. We're giving people 2 or 3 minutes because I know we're all, you know, we're never, none of us are only 40% on time.
Do you want to, like, put a little description of yourself?
There we go.
Okay.
Take a seat.
These are
here for annoyance. They're not reserving seats.
They're what? I thought it was reserved.
No, there.
There's literally.
I'm highly tolerant, but there might be people in the audience that aren't. Sit wherever you want. There's not a voodoo curse on the front seats. I feel like everybody comes to these things always going to be like your whole phobia.
Yeah, sure.
You don't listen. I'm going to call on people. Okay, I think we're going to get going. If you walk in, it's not a big deal. I'm not the best at this. Welcome to our panel of what we call institutional preservation and the furry history and artifacts. This is not us to, just to make sure this is clear, we are sort of amateurs in this, we both have experience, this is here to sort of start a conversation, do a little presentation, and then see where we can go from this, because most fandoms will experience this. We'll get into the presentation. So who are we? Let's go from here. So Overford, yeah. Who are we? We're going to talk about what I call the cycle of loss. Then I'm going to just talk about the sort of what is involved with preservation, because there's a lot of stuff out there. The current state of preservation in the furry community, and then just a couple things on building institutions, and then, like I said, just a discussion afterwards. The main thing is, and hopefully as this goes into, we'll hope to have this in the future. Yep.
Can I say something?
Sure.
Fucking Elon Musk, everybody. He's trying to go and basically take all the and after he has to be like, yeet.
We'll see. Yeah. He says a lot of things.
He says a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. No, this is in progress.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, it's not surprising though.
Who are we? So my primary focus, you might know, my main place where I put my interests are rail transport and the history of technology. I've worked, especially in Pittsburgh, I've worked at the Large Scale Systems Museum. That's the Computer Mainframe Museum up in New Kensington. I've worked with a variety of other groups, rail-related, mainly in Pennsylvania, surprisingly, even though I'm in Maryland now. And I've also had a lot of experience I worked for a used book charity for a while, and a lot of electronics preservation, electronic stuff.
This says I'm an idiot extraordinaire.
Yay.
I do a lot of things, but that doesn't mean I do them well. Quite. To the point about Elon Musk and Twitter and the accounts, that's actually a really good point to consider. Well, what do? Do we pull our data? Do we make sure that we have that preserved? What do we do with it? So a lot of how I come in and approach this is I have been a chairman. I have done numerous different events I have been around, I have been in the business since 2001, so not, I've not been here as long as many people have been here. But I've seen things grow, change, and I've tried to work to preserve a lot of what it represents to me. And we're here really to talk about things like that and hopefully bring people together and bring these pieces together that will make us actually have a history. Because history makes what we are today and always will. And if we don't know what that history is, how do we know what we've already tried or what we've already done?
I just want to bring up a quick unit of the first of the overall arching theory of this is what I sort of call the cycle of loss, or why Penn Station got demolished, or you could also call it why Doctor Who got deleted.
Yes.
And the first thing is, in most, a lot of fandoms, a lot of communities, the first thing is stuff's in service. Items are plentiful. Your stain breaks, you go to the dealers, you buy, you go to your artist, you buy a new one. It's replaceable, you don't think about it. It's all there, all those people that you, all that stuff that you know and love is a lot, they're all there, they're all alive. Your fursuit maker still there, can fix your suit. Everyone has multiple copies of the information. Twitter is there, it's not going away, everything's hunky-dory.
You actually pointed out the suit thing. The person who made my suit disappeared. No idea where they've gone. There's no trace of any change to their accounts. They just one day disappeared. So I have no way of contacting them. So again, plays right into the point where we don't think that these people are going to be gone. We don't think that things are going to be gone because we can go buy them, we can go get them, we can go find them. We can get them fixed. But we can't. Always rely.
Yep. Stage two, this is also from a cognitive point of view, is what I call displacement. You have a V1 suit, you get a new V2 suit. You don't wear the V1 as much anymore. You get newer badges. The stuff that you have sort of gets old, less replaced, but you're not thinking about it because you're still actively there and buying new things. You might not be aware that the Twitter accounts that you depended on are being deleted. And then finally you have stage three where you realize that, hey, this old information or artifact or whatever is valuable, where is it? And then you hear that it got thrown out 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And so this is where you're then scrambling to find who has offline copies of a thing. Where is it? And then you realize the value of a thing. Maybe it has real value in money. Maybe it has sentimental or historical value for your community. And now you're in a scramble where everything was there. You didn't think about it. It got thrown away. And now you're trying to restore it and get there.
Yeah.
So a lot of this is just psychology. I've heard someone say children are primed to hate what their parents like and venerate their grandparents. You have nostalgia cycles. Everything's coming back from the 80s right now. Then the 90s will come back. This would be weird since we are producing nothing now, what's going to happen in 20 more years where the nostalgia?
Yeah, we're gonna hit that moment. We're going to go, whoa, I want to go back and revisit that time. And we're going to try new ways of recreating it. It's just like everybody tries to do new art deco.
Wait, they're going to have animated remakes of live action remakes.
There you go. There you go. Right on the money.
There's also, the cycle of life. You accumulate.
It's all whatchamacallit.
Your stuff accumulates, but the amount of time you have to deal with it stays the same. You have, a new car, for the car collectors, you get a whole bunch of new cars, but you only have a certain number of hours, weekends, personal time off to maintain that, and eventually stuff is just getting more and more into storage, and it just sort of just gets, out of sight, out of mind.
And that's actually funny, because I have the same problem. I have many projects, I have many cars, I have many tech electronics to work on. Is it the best thing to preserve that in such a fashion, just to leave it sit there unrepaired? Or is it better to give it to somebody or try to find somebody who's going to repair it? Now, the problem you get in that is nobody knows who's going to want to repair it. So doing what we're doing is trying to find those people.
And just some examples of stuff, again, a couple more examples. All the Golden Age comics. It's like how many Superman number one? Well, it's probably whatever it is. There's a whole bunch, but there's not a lot of good examples. Silent films. We've lost 70% of the silent films. An interesting thing I've especially seen from everybody's favorite Twitter, YouTube car furry. It's the performance cars are the ones that are most likely to get saved. I think the UK is down to like 100 functional Morris Marinas.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Top Gear was trashing them, and now they're out of them.
Yeah, no problem. And it's funny because that's something I did not mention earlier. So I the cars that I tend to hold on to and the cars that I tend to venerate for myself or have been the cars that you don't preserve. I have a Model T that's here, if you happen to see that. I'll be driving it around tomorrow, so if you want to suit, you can take a ride, because that's what I like to do it. But that is a preserved piece that is not restored. That is one that is just a long-lived, taken-care-of machine. And I have a Yugo, another same thing, because these are both the people's car. It is just like you have with Tata trying to be the people's car, failing in India. But every single one of these countries, every single one of these regions of the world, all have what you would consider to be a people's car, the Fiat 500, the Volkswagen Bug, original people's car, really, when you think about it, and all these different variant makes making the people's car. Who keeps these around? Nobody. They're just disposable machines. And that's fine, but do we want to preserve it? Yeah.
So a couple of things I want to go into, just dive into the world of stuff. Yeah. I'm in a family where, I wouldn't say they're hoarders, but we're definitely, at least parts of my family, have hoarded more into collecting, and these are a lot of stuff I had to think about over the years. Anything, I'm just going to say thing here, it's anything, exists on a spectrum, I say significance, rarity, and value. First off, valuable things do tend to take care of them fast, to take care of themselves. I don't worry about the stuff. You know, you don't worry about the Ferraris. Everybody, they're valuable. People know that they're valuable. But value can also change or not be widely known. The more important sort of spectrum or graph is rarity versus significance. You can have things that are not rare and not very significant. A generic Anthrocon con book is probably not, we're a small community, but they print thousands of these con books, and a lot of people save them. That's, it's good, but it's still not, I'm just going, this is things to think about. Let's say the first suit lounge sign for MFF 2023. It's unique, not resin, not rare, but maybe it's not that significant. Of course, you have KDK coverage of maybe the first public Anthrocon parade. It's a recordings, probably backed up a whole bunch of times, not rare, but it is significant. That was the first parade. It's really important that that was captured and documented. And finally, you have like things that could be, let's say, physical hotel correspondence of Albany Anthrocon. Damn rare and probably also really significant. I'm not saying that giving you a rule. These are not rules of what we should preserve this, not this, but the world is still trade-offs. You have to make trade-offs of what you're preserving, what you should focus your attention on. That's just something to think about.
Space.
Yep.
Money. And just overall time and effort you have to spare.
And this brings us to what I like to call negative value. Negative value where you have something that is not like it's not a Ferrari. Maybe it's the Yugo, and it's taking up someone's money to store it. Negative things with negative value, where it's storage costs, maintenance costs, psychological costs, liability. Oh my God, there's a lot of stuff that people just chunk because of liability.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that tend to vanish the fastest. Yes. Nitrate films. Oh my gosh, the liability with a nitrate film. You can't extinguish it, and it will burn down whatever. And that's where they're all gone.
Yep.
Both because they caught fire, and it was a huge liability. And stuff tends to be discarded when it's actual present day tactical cost. Outraise its immediate value.
Gold coins. People melt down gold coins.
Oh yeah, the value in the gold versus the value of having a coin.
Yep.
And we're also seeing this now in the digital space. We thought digital was free, as was brought up right there with the Twitter. We are learning that in the not low 0% interest rate world, suddenly there's a lot of places, not only Twitter, but Google looks like it's going to get more serious about its account limitations. And it's not even that. There's a bunch of stuff that vanished. Tumblr threw up all its LGBT stuff. It's happening again and again and again.
What about everybody's favorite? Mine.
Oh yeah, Vine.
We lost Vine, and that's something we got to be very careful about, because digital data is not something that we actually own. This is all somewhere else.
So you know,
quickly. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
A lot of people also think that because it's being like stored online, that it'll always be the same. But things stored online can actually degrade.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
For a personal example, I had a actually Stump knows it. We were in part of a computer club that had lifetime memberships. And it was good for a while, but then suddenly things changed. kids stopped learning how to admin Linux systems, and there was literally a thermal event, and then they never rebuilt the system. Mm-hmm. And then 6 months later, I had literally had a, someone would give me private mirrors. I had a mirror. I had stuff on Google. I had two independently mirrored servers. That guy was like, oh, I can't do this anymore. Some guy from China is scraping your stuff that's giving me 4 gigabytes of trans for a month. And I lost, in the space of like, you know, 6 months to a year, I lost like all my, two-thirds of my my online replication. And that's just me. I'm someone who cares about it.
It's funny, because like, this occurred to me for a totally unrelated reason. So, whenever the new ChatGPT came out, there was a story, specifically being that this girl wanted to talk to her former self. She wanted to have a conversation. So she took her journals from her childhood, from the time she wanted to talk to herself, put it in the ChatGPT and asked it, and said, and basically gave parameters of what she was as best as she could, and she had a conversation. She said it was one of the most therapeutic things she's ever had. But if we don't have that, what do? It can be used in such ways that could be very beneficial to each of us. And I know that I'm trying to do that, and I realize that a lot of my journals are gone. I tried. So what do I do now? I can't find more. So we should always be aware of the ephemerality of these things that we don't want.
For anything that you want to preserve, there's going to be mechanics about how you preserve it. It's not like I saved this thing. You've got to always just be aware of how does it stay saved for, you know, whatever period of time that you can. Often it just comes down to square feet and HVAC. If you get those two things, and there are ways to get those. If you get square feet and HVAC, you can save a lot of stuff. Upkeep and restoration, there are things that, you know, that Clay tablets tend to be okay for a while. Textiles, unfortunately, are kind of yikes. I know that we're big on textiles here, but there's a bunch you can do. I'll give you a good example. The Apollo spacesuits, they used to be able to trot them out all the time. You can't touch them anymore because they'll fall apart.
I've actually heard of a company who has gone to great lengths to preserve their old like wallpapers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the name, but they're English. They actually rented out part of a salt mine to try and keep everything.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll show you the video after that. Or I'll show you the video later.
Thank you.
And also always work out about fires and floods. Pittsburgh has an issue with floods. There's a pinball museum in Pittsburgh that got flooded out in 2003.
Yep. I used to live in Millvale. Now, Millvale had a flood in 2004 for Hurricane Ida. The entire town center is it right next to a creek. It's not a river. We don't get flooded by rivers. But because of development of the river, it caused it to back up and caused the flooding to occur about 4 feet into the base elevation of the whole city. It destroyed so much. There was a store there called Jerry's Attic Record. Not Jerry's. Attic Records. I'm sorry. Jerry's Records is a totally different place. He lost his entire inventory. And so we do not have any of those records that were destroyed in the flood. And that includes all of these different aspects of these buildings that you're able to do. All these important things like the designs,
mm-hmm,
of different Victorian structures. We need to preserve that somehow, either visually or photographically.
The MR2 museum got hit by a flood. Well, I mean, you know, it was a for-profit thing, but that 25 MR2s got destroyed. It was like the biggest collection of them. For digital, the same thing. The biggest thing, we've talked a bunch about digital previously, you know, early in this chat, but the biggest thing in digital you need to think of is on-prem versus off-prem. Cloud storage is highly reliable, kind of. You've got to pay that bill everywhere it goes around. If you're going to be on-prem, you're more vulnerable to floods, and you have to make sure that however, you have to replicate that data so you don't have one hard drive die and it's all gone. And the other thing you need to remember is just storing stuff in let's say you have an amazing, you know, bulletproof, bombproof storage bunker. Part of the thing about preservation is you have to have access and organization. I know a lot of places and people where, yes, they have great storage containers, but it's not accessible,
yeah,
and it's not organized.
Yeah, I had to learn in some ways that I have a home backup, and I also have a backup somewhere else. You can do that. It's a luxury in many cases of preservation, but with data, it's not. It's not truly that much of a luxury. And this is something that if you have the money, like if you can give it to people, say, here, we're giving you the storage for free whenever you do this, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We can offer different ideas that people can bring forward, and we can try to fund. It helps people preserve things that they not maybe wouldn't normally preserve. But data is also done really cheap.
Yeah. But you have to still put a little bit of the effort in.
Yeah.
Another couple things to think about is what I call the unknown unknowns. This is there's a lot of stuff that we know we need to preserve. Art, con books, AV materials, fursuits. Stuff that we actually aware that we have to be on the lookout for. Original art. So listen, everything's scanned. You go to your artist. What happened to the PSD files or the physical artwork that might have been stuff that went into a con book doesn't have everyone have copies of it, but are there physicals with that? GOH related items, prototype, like these are things we kind of know that we need to be on the lookout for. But there's a lot of other stuff that I don't think is on anybody's radar. And listen, these are things that I might have thought of, but there's a lot of stuff that I'm sure I'm missing. Like I said, convention correspondence. How did a con start?
Yeah, that's fine. That's as a person who was on the board of Devil, there's an interesting thing that I realized very quickly. When you establish that organization, you basically have to go, I better hold on to this as best as I possibly can because there's legal ramifications. But just as you said, how did it start? Many of these did not start like that as a 501c3 or C7. They were just a backyard party that turned big. And no one even remembered where they even started at half the time. They're like, where'd we get?
I still have an email. I got an invite for the first Fur Fright.
Yeah.
Which was a party. It was a picnic.
And I chair WPAPA. And WPAPA, Western Theater Fair Weekend. That started as a barbecue in 2001. Where is this stuff? Where's the information? Where's that understanding? We had a lot of it, don't get me wrong. But until we formed the organization, it wasn't a mindset of retain. It was we don't have space for that.
I just want to get, the current state of the community, as I'm seeing right now, I'm going to go to the good news. We're still pretty young. The first, I might be having off by 1 year. You can correct me, I think the first official con was 1989. Okay. That's within my lifetime. We have a lot of people, we're still young. The bad news is I do think that we're sort of in stage 1.5. We're rapidly heading towards the point where a lot of stuff is going to just sort of vanish because no one's paying attention. And listen, a lot of stuff has been lost. I hate to give this example. All the original artwork for every A&E besides this last year was lost due to a Google Docs mix-up. Gone. All gone. It might still be around, but all the artifacts before COVID when they were doing a leadership transition were put into Google Drive. And during the COVID, the password got lost, the account's gone.
And it's funny because it wasn't even something that I would consider to be a real problem other than from a legal standpoint. It's one of those things where you go, actually, there's a lot to be lost there. We, as a smaller con, and I know of other smaller cons, and I the other one I'm in Florida, it's like you ask other cons for information, and they send you documents. They send you their earliest articles of incorporation and different types of elements of business transactions, and it helps you get a footing, and it helps you move forward. If you don't have to reinvent the wheel, don't reinvent the wheel, and if you keep losing all your wheels, how are you going to reinvent it in the first place?
So the good news, as I said, the good news is I feel that as a community, we are individually, we are very good about holding on to stuff. I've worked with events before. I used to help with a student work con, and I always get furry art for that because it was cheaper. I have all that stuff. We all save our con books. We all save our badges. So I feel it's good at an individual level. There's a lot of people with a lot of great collections out there. But at the same point, fast forward 20 years, 40 years, 50 years, individual, you run into issues with individual stuff. And the thing is, there's a lack of awareness and coordination of what happens when someone who might be an older member of the fandom might not have a lot of family or family that is actively hostile towards their lifestyle. What happens if suddenly that's hitting they pass away and that goes away. So as I like to say, at this point, institutions are what we need to have here. Individuals aren't a long-term solution. No one here is a long-term solution in the big enough point of a long-term. When I say the keystone, it's not about Pennsylvania. You need to keep what I still call keystone individuals or things that can really coordinate, organize. And if everyone's doing their own thing, a lot of stuff can drop through the cracks, especially because of life events or the fact that we have a lot of LGBT in these individuals.
levels.
Yep.
Not to mention that completely random things can happen. I have a shot glass that I quite that was from one of my first Furrydelphias, which is like the second Furrydelphia ever. My cat smashed it.
Exactly.
Well,
yep.
There's any number of things that could just happen. And
yeah.
This is not a statement of hoard everybody.
Yep.
This is a statement of what can we preserve.
Yeah. Or at least systematically. Like, again, we don't need everyone's Furrydelphia shot glass. Maybe we need two.
Yeah, but like that.
Yep.
Maybe in different cases, if we're able to find stocks more, we can use that to help just either be part of charity or be given to certain other preservations.
This is where I get to the good news is that 501c3 organizations, which is charities, every FurCon is one of these. There's like, we'll have 12. I think there's like 7, 8, 12. Everyone's different. AnthroCon is not the one. Is not the type of charity you think it is. I think it's like a country club.
Yeah.
It's
Is this ELC 7?
No, 501c7.
Okay, so I think there's a federal change. I didn't know.
Okay, yeah.
They changed it from. They originally were a C3.
Which one's a country club?
C7.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the good news is they have distributed leadership, so there's no, you have less single points of failure. Listen, in this day and age, there's a lot, when you have keystone individuals, sometimes they can get into trouble, and then that can sink an organization.
There have been examples
yes.
of that.
Another thing is that these organizations, which, you know, aren't typically not, you know, they don't, AnthroCon doesn't have to, like, hit age 90 and die. They can own assets and property. And also, it's depending on your organization, you can also do tax-exempt donations, which is clutch. Some examples that I personally worked with, like I said, large-scale system museum in New Kensington. I donated, my dad worked for an old payroll company, they moved businesses, and I got a couple box trucks worth of old IBM computers sent to them. It's an amazing organization. There's a guy, it's just like the Uncle Kage of mainframe computing. It's this one guy who's just bootstrapped this whole thing, and now it's sort of chugging along, but he's done an amazing job. Any railroad history organization, they've done great jobs for it. So, you know, that's sort of, I always say, like, every fandom's the same, just with different details. Rail is one of the older ones, and they've fortunately been able to, what I always say, rail is very future, in the way that it's just been able to have very preservative. So, rail organizations, they've done things like preserve entire corporate archives.
Yep.
When their favorite railroad goes bust, they can get all the stuff, and all the Pennsylvania Railroad corporate documents are in Lewistown, Pennsylvania.
And that also benefits you in more than just one way, because when you get this correspondence, you can understand where business was at the time, what decisions to make, what decisions not to make. It helps inform everything, not just railroad preservation.
Yeah. And I will also say, in Pittsburgh, the Professional Amateur Pinball Association, just avoid the floodplains. They have been able to restore their stuff. But again, that's for anyone who's aware of that one. So I want to give there's a couple options we have. Because listen, we're not trying to drive an agenda, but there's two things that we sort of thought of that we're projecting to you guys. And we're gonna run this panel a bunch of other times at different cons. If you want to show up again, that's great. Hopefully it won't be too, we want to get it out to people, but it might not have drastically different content. The first one is a con-based preservation model. First off, the fandom is amazing. Cons are institutions. They're all 501c3s. They all kind of have storage capacity. They're geographically distributed. That means if you have a fur who has a bunch of stuff that he doesn't know what to do with or is getting evicted or whatever, the problem is they might have a local con. That con could send people out. And also lends itself to any person at a con involved with a con. Maybe they're higher up in it, maybe they're the chair, maybe they're just someone who's just a volunteer with a lot of energy. They can say, hey, maybe we need an AnthroCon archive. Working through your local con or furry group or meetup, anything that has any institutional capacity, can be an easy way to bootstrap this and get some local capability.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, I have met a few people, and I know a few people, who would consider themselves community historians. Like, I do. And I genuinely want to reach out specifically to those people that we're talking about. Like, we want to bring these people together in certain ways. So,
I think know someone that I could give you the telegram
perfect.
If you wanted after those.
And the only reason I'm going to that point right this second is because I actually have to get going in a very short second here. So I don't want to just, I want to kind of, I don't want to bury the lead and leave and
that's my personal leave. So, I said there are some cons here. It's cons for cons. Cons. The primary goal is putting out a con, not running a museum or archive. If all they can do is a storage bunker, again, there are issues with storage bunkers. They're not really a great long-term solution. And also, depending on their organization, they might not qualify for either tax-exempt donations or have other limitations of what they can do or accept or run or spend money on. So this brings us to sort of the hidden obvious thing is what might we do for an actual museum of the furry fandom or other names of it? And this would be a more centralized institution that can work with a variety of kinds of groups. Where would it be? Someplace we'd probably have inexpensive commercial real estate, a strong local community, generally accessible in Pittsburgh.
That wasn't even me.
I put that in there.
There is truth to this. Now, we said there is flooding in the area. That all depends on the area you're in. We have lots of high points, as you can see, around you. So we have lots of great places that are great preservation locations, because we actually have a lot of great warehouses, too. Like places you can seal, places you can condition.
I mentioned the large-scale systems museum. They bought 50,000 square feet in New Kensington. Yeah. And this is just one guy.
And the beautiful part about this stuff, and the beautiful part about any sort of museum like this, unless the person is a malicious individual in this situation would moot anyways, no one's going to really attack a museum on furry unless they have a malicious intent. And if that's a malicious intent, they're going to do it anywhere it is. So you put it in a place that even isn't like ideal for people to go to a museum, like for the storage, that's fine. You put it anywhere.
Isn't there I've seen at least two Twitter accounts dedicated to preserving furry history.
Yes.
Yep. Awesome. The thing is, I don't know where they're keeping their physical locations. I think they might actually be keeping a secret for that exact reason.
That's totally fair.
And this is not trying to jump ahead on anyone's stuff. It's simply, yes, I know there's people who do this, but like, are they a charitable organization?
That's the danger. Yeah. It's not even just that. It's the danger is we don't know who they are as much as we know what they have, which is great. And by all means, I'm not discouraging anybody from doing it. Please do it.
It's simply, what's the backstop? Is there a backstop for when anyone who has the best of intentions and an amazing collection of, what's their backstop if they get into trouble? Yeah. And we've seen so many cons get into trouble.
And that was another point. It's like, we've had these cons that actually have, so for example, cons that have come and gone. Cons that have tried and failed immediately, or those that have stuck around and gone. In each of these cases, we should have this information because it tells us what are the telltale signs of problems. When you analyze it, you can say, oh, don't go down this path. This is where you're going to go wrong. It helps inform us.
So he's going to check out in a second. I'm going to stay for just a bit of we're just going to have a discussion here, just some stuff. We just started a Telegram group.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's one of those things of, what are the first steps? We have a panel. We can form a Telegram. We're not going to rush out and do a lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
It's, hey, this is an issue. Let's get some people involved. Let's have a couple more panels of cons. Let's get some more people in the group. Another thing that I was thinking of an easy first step one of the first things we can also do is sort of have what I call semi-stopgap, semi-formal services, sort of like first-aid search and rescue.
Yeah.
It would be like, hey, it's basically the like furry history rescue. Like, hey, this stuff's getting thrown out. Can anyone go and grab it? And listen, even if that person grabs it, whatever they do with it, it's better than going in the trash can.
Yeah,
you have nothing to lose in that situation.
Exactly, and we actually have one. We have one actually at the Heinz History Museum now, stored, protected, preserved.
Oh, what?
Fursuit.
Oh, fursuit. Yeah.
So we have situations already established. We have precedent for this. So we can go forward.
Okay.
Yeah. But I do have to go, and I do apologize.
You have a question?
And I would love to stay and chat more. I really would.
It's more of a question of volatility. In Denmark, we are a very small group. We've been getting the back of various websites, like for Affinity, Metrodin, and so forth. We're seeing that many things that are being stored on cloud servers are deteriorating at a surprisingly fast rate.
Yep.
The earliest artwork that was uploaded to Equestria Daily is now unavailable.
Uh-oh. So it just goes to the thing of, so I'm one of those, and I'll date myself. I'm of that generation where, you know, the internet was slow and unreliable. So I obsessively do save a lot of things to hard storage. I think there's a lot of people who still save a lot of things to hard storage. And great, keep doing that, everybody. I feel like at some point, in younger generations definitely do not. And I even fall into that stuff where it's like, oh, it's just so much easier to save a bunch of links and it's there.
Yeah. And then you realize you go back like 5 years later,
and
you're like, oh, it's gone.
And I'll give people a quick example. There's a really fascinating project to save Prodigy. Yeah, I got that. Prodigy, pre-internet thing. The thing is that it did a lot of caching. So anyone who has an old PC from like the Prodigy era, they're grabbing those caches off these PCs and like sending it to the central archive so they can reassemble Prodigy. So there's a lot of good stuff to be done. There's a lot of, I'm not being doom and gloom. The doom and gloom is where you have a whole bunch of like second chances. The situations are where you burn through your second chances, and then you get to the point where you realize that you really need to be looking out there. Lost media, the whole realm of lost media, if you look in those stories, like how Dr. Who got lost, or how those silent films caught on fire, anytime something is actually lost, and you look at, like, well, it was here, and then, like, well, they over here didn't want it, and they were there didn't want it, like, you had each chance to either save something or have it go in the trash. And in a lot of cases, you know, that Swiss cheese has to line up. But the longer you go, the more that things tend toward entropy, just like the universe, and stuff goes away. So before this, we can do a Q&A. I can ramble on about preservation stuff for a while. The first thing is that you guys can try to find this if you want. I'm not sure how good searching for Telegram groups are, or if you want to, if I can try to invite you, or you know what, I can try to invite links or whatever. I'm not that clueless, but I don't do a lot of group starting. We just started a furry preservation group. It's called Furry Preservation. If you can search for it, if you guys wanted to search for it, you can find it. I'm not sure how you join, but I can always make a link or whatever stuff. I'm sorry, I'm being totally inept here. I'm the person who doesn't start the groups in my social circle. Do I have to do anything to make the group public or searchable?
Just create the invite link. I can help you with that.
Okay, hold on.
Yep.
Do add members. Where's the invite link? Yeah, invite link back.
Invite link.
Yeah.
Add members. Invite the group by a link. Then you can just copy that. And then you can just send it to everyone, or even better yet, like, if you
go.
So you can share it around.
Well, yeah, that's the goal, yeah. Is there a way to just make it globally searchable, or I have to say?
You have to send the link
okay.
to people. What I would actually do is I would project the link onto that screen.
Oh, great.
Yeah, or you can even create a, I don't know how you do this in Telegram, but you can create a QR code link out of that link.
Sorry, this was a
group
bit.
Time.
Anyway,
Bill. The group to the
link. Wait, what are you, a public group? Perfect.
Yeah,
oh, okay, I'm just going to make it t.me for a preservation.
.me.
Oh. Perfect, thank you. That good?
Yep.
Perfect, super. That's all I need?
Yeah. Wait, there.
Yes.
Yep.
Sorry about that. I'm literally not the person who makes the room party invites in my social circle. I just do the social media. Okay, anyway, we have a furry preservation group. You guys can hopefully find it. I'm going to get a whole bunch of notifications. I'm going to have to mute. So again, we're not trying to, I have to make these disclaimers. We're not trying to do a weird furry clout power grab, trying to like be the preservation people. We're presenting this panel, and we're going to present it a couple more times due to an honest feeling that, like, people aren't, there's a general lack of awareness born from the experiences of other fan groups and fan communities. I feel like the popular culture ones, the really popular culture stuff, has a little bit of an advantage. Despite all the people who are into furry right now, we're pretty big. Things like whatever, but like let's say any 80s franchise, Transformers, Thundercats, 90, any of that stuff. I always love it. Like, you can go on eBay and you can still find like new in-box examples of pretty much anything. It'll cost you, but it's like wildly available. I don't know, again, as a group that's a bit smaller, we have to be more on top of this. But does anybody have any comments, questions,
thoughts? We've got some people joining already.
Yes, thank you guys so much. So this group, listen, you guys talk for in the shorter term. the group's going to be gathering people, occasional stuff. There's not like any, hey, let's run out. Hey, let's go buy property. Hey, let's do whatever stuff. I do also think in the more shorter term that I might, you know, it might be something we try to put together, something like fursuit SAR for furry stuff. Help, my parents are throwing out my fursuit. Help this, help that. Like, what? Who can we get around the country? Like, what sort of people can we get in this thing of when there's a you know, an actual, like, this stuff's getting discarded emergency that we can have someone try to go and pick it up? That's another thing that's low cost, something we can do. Again, that's not a long-term solution. We can't rely on volunteers filling up their garages with someone else's furry stuff. But in the near term, it might be something that we're going on. Listen, we're losing a whole bunch of people, even as is. There's a couple folks that recently passed away here. I don't think that it's it's not a massive stuff, but at an eventual point, you know, artists, major people, you know, you don't know what's going to go on. So, any other questions or comments or thoughts or experiences? Yeah?
So, we have the first steps. What would you propose as the second
step? Okay, so listen, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail here.
Yep.
I can say that there is financial resources that are available from certain people. So, if there is a community that can support a institution, booting it up with, let's say, property and storage is probably actually attainable without having to be like going hat in hand and doing like weird begging and whatever. That can happen, but it's going to be the, is there a community behind this? Is, you know, I know a lot of situations where you have that one passionate guy that spent, you know, that takes all their time, it's mainly the time and the effort to go through, and they do a great job. But that's still, you know, you'd like to have, hey, we can put together a board of directors and have like 10 people who are involved. There are a lot of people. As opposed to just like one benefactor like working themselves to the bone trying to like get a thing going. I just want people to know, to become like an actual tax-exempt donatable organization is like an 80-page IRS application. It's not, you know, impossible, but it does take a good amount of legal effort and putting it together, having a board, having people, etc. So it's moderately involved. But like I said, I've been very heartened with some of the preservation organizations I've been involved with. Again, the guy in New Kensington, which is about, for those who don't know, is about 10 miles north here up the Allegheny. Again, buying deals, like these downtowns, listen, I don't want to make fun of the Pittsburgh area, but like these downtowns are pretty vacant. He bought this stuff, and now the town loves it because he's getting tour buses in for people from Japan wanting to see these old computers that are, some of the stuff he has is not available anywhere else. And it's because he took the time and the effort to put this all together. Yep.
Someone's asking for the slides because they missed the presentation.
Oh yeah, I can. If you're on the chat link, I will make those slides available. I can make them available right now. We made a public group. It's searchable under t.me/furrypreservation, one word. I'm pretty sure that's it.
Search furry preservation, one word.
Yeah. I'm gonna forward the chat the Doohickey links here. Yay, I love how like at least we have some tools to be able to community organize here. It's nice that like it's not all gone away or Elon Musk made you pay $8 for it. I have an amount of experience in, you know, the physical data. Oh, let me get back to textiles real quick. Let me ramble on about this a little bit. Yes, long-term preservation of textiles is probably, you know, anything with foam, that foam is going to start degrading after time. You get to a point where a fursuit head is going to have to go in a box and stay there, and hopefully no one touches it. But at the same point, I think that you could have, just imagine something where you could have, there's a period where you can actually still wear stuff. You're all wearing your fursuits right now. They last for a good amount of time. They don't last forever, but they do last. So imagine you could have a collection of, hey, imagine, insert popular maker here, we have like once, you know, we have suits from all across their career. And you can go and look at them, or even depending if they're not, you know, depending on the condition, make up an appointment, try, you know, if you're a maker, you can try them on and step this stuff. And as the time goes on, like imagine being able to go and see like the history of fursuit construction. Examine that in one place. And you know, it's and there's a lot of need. So who knows, who has a maker, who knows, I have friends who have, there's some early super, popular makers of early suits, they tend to, what is it, they will sometimes disavow But it's still neat. It's like, yeah, there's some really old certain makers out there that they don't like to say that that was the bad suit that they made, but they still exist. And I think it's still worth seeing how someone was able to evolve from their first suit to their fifth, their 10th, their 20th. That's really fascinating. And that's the stuff that I see in other museums where they're like, here's a famous furniture maker, and here's the first piece we have of them, and here's one 20 years later. Or like, this is a Picasso. Here's a thing of Picasso made when he was a teenager, and here it is later on. And I think that our art is no less valuable or interesting, even if it's only going to be examined by future furs in 80 years and no one else cares. It's still a really amazing thing of human creation that should be, you know, not just tossed in a waste bin. So, anyone else?
Yeah, no,
good.
It's just what you're saying,
yeah,
about having a distributed group,
yep,
for that.
And that can also work. So,
yeah,
if you guys are involved with cons or groups, consider looking into that. All I know is that almost every con, all they have is a storage unit somewhere. But it's better than nothing. Or maybe, and here's one more thing I'm going to say, and don't sound bad about this. Every cons are getting to the point where, and this isn't a bad thing, but I'm saying, I think that cons are generating like six figures now to charity, and it's usually they'll pick some local charity and they'll dump a ton of money on it. I'm saying that, you know, a fraction of that going to intra-community charitable works, preservation or other stuff. And I'm saying that we have a huge amount of in-community resource that is just sort of sloshing around and is randomly falling on the charity that a con picks. And having something that the community, that can benefit the community in and of itself, isn't necessarily a bad thing. Yep.
So there was a panel last year at AnthroCon called Organizing a Free Fandom.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of touched on that, where it seems like a lot of cons will select kind of specifically apolitical, like animal rescue type,
mm-hmm,
funds, which is great in its own right, but it seems that there is a conscious effort in some cons to not do things that would benefit the fandom or be a bit more kind of forceful.
I don't even think benefit the fandom should be that controversial. I mean, like every other, a lot of communities out there have, you know, self-beneficial stuff. But I said, it's not like, oh, we shouldn't spend money on like a lot of external stuff, but if you can, and that's expensive, but I don't see it. What in the fandom do we trust to give money to right now? I don't know, there's a lot of skeezy stuff in the fandom, and the cons are generally doing okay. You know, most cons, you know, you're either donating to them already by attending them or giving them money, but there aren't a lot of, besides GoFundMes for specific people, there's nothing in the fandom that really exists to give money to. Or support. Anything else? Well, I want to thank you guys so much for coming out. I saw that there's a lot of interest in this, but usually you see, like you heard the banter earlier, like you have 80 people interested and 10 people show up, so this is really, really cool. And thank you so much for joining the Telegram group. Don't expect me to really get anything in there until I get out of the con. I am responsible for doing responsibilities. So, what's up?
Yeah.
Oh,
no. Just a minor detail that we have in the Danish Historic Museum is we begin to scrape some of these things and send back them off. Digital,
mm-hmm,
information is very important to distribute copies of them. It cannot be done by individuals. We realized it very, very early. We had this plan of making the website, basically, where you could have upload some torrent representing an archive.
Mm-hmm.
That way you could have a simple health meter that was how many are seeding them actively.
And by the way, before I go away, you can start today by making sure your own furry data or whatever is backed up or replicated. Remember those old CDs and DVDs you used to burn stuff to? That's not forever, but it's still a backup, all sorts of other stuff. Just practice your own stuff. Make sure that what's up?
That's just like as an addendum to that, if you do have like some old backup CDs or DVDs of art or commissions or whatever, go back every now and then and make sure you can still read that data, because
yep,
they do degrade over time.
And good news is CDs have a lot of error correction, so if it takes a while to read it off and the drive's making a lot of weird noises, put it onto a new CD, DVD, or hard drive, please.
SSDs.
SSDs have their own issues that it's being stored as charges on capacitors, and those will leak out after time. I don't know what the lifetimes for is, but if you just check on stuff, if you check on a CD or DVD that's stored well every 5 or 10 years, you know, you can keep that going. Was there a question over here?
I came in late. I don't know if you touched on this, but the role of copyright within saving stuff. So I've got to hear about it.
So listen, within the fandom, if there are really litigious corporations in the fandom going after people's personal backups. I have yet to run into them.
So I know from reading the Video Game History Foundation, mm-hmm. they say a big obstacle is the kind of nebulous role of copyright currently. So under copyright law for video games, for example, there is decade you can't.
Yeah.
So like Stanford doesn't want to touch it because whatever. Insert archival group here doesn't want to touch it because of copyright. So if you care about archiving stuff, try to push for copyleft type.
I will also say that library things that are classified as libraries and archives do actually have a lot of leeway.
Right.
The whole Internet Archive suit is kind of like is outside. You know, it's over there. It's a sort of a different issue. It's not about them archiving things. But at the same point, you know, I think we also have an advantage that we're a little bit smaller. And we have a lot of self-generated art. If a Spurries artist really wants to go crazy and be a jerk, they can. But I think we're a pretty good community in that. So anyway, was there a question?
No, I was actually just going to say, you know, from the professional standpoint, archival projects have a lot of leeway.
Yeah.
That's...
So, you know, this is really focused at archival. Being able to resell things or transform them or whatever, we're not trying to get into that. Anyway, I'm not going anywhere. We did have 90 minutes, but I feel that we're good. Everybody good?
Yep.
All right, thank you so much for coming out.